evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SouthCars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SouthCars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SouthCars server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control for this session is actually VO1UKZ from Newfoundland. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I'm in Port St. Lucie, Florida, South Florida, where it's currently a temperature of 76. High today was 86, low tonight of about 65. So it was a very beautiful day. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, please come aboard. Great. Here are no emergency traffic. How about anyone celebrating a birthday this week or maybe last week that would like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy birthday? No birthdays either. And like I always like to say, that means we're not getting any older. This is the monthly Thursday informational net open forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. And our subject this evening is computer security. So I hope everyone had a fantastic St. Patty's Day. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to our master of ceremonies tonight, and that is VO1UKZ, Daryl, up there in Newfoundland. So, Daryl, if you're all ready, I'm going to turn it over to you, and thanks for allowing me to open the session.
Well, Kathy, my thanks to you for doing just that. Nobody gets a show started like you do, of course, so thanks for coming in here and doing that for us this evening, and I hope you'll jump back in later throughout the program, possibly, if you have the opportunity, and say hello. I chose to use a different device here this evening just for the reason you just heard. I didn't want messages and emails and stuff like that coming across too bad there this evening, so hopefully that'll be sufficient. See a few stations connected tonight that I'm familiar with from other nets and whatnot. I've been plugging this one, so glad to see everybody came out this evening. All right, before we get things started, I'd like to pass it over to my cohort for this evening, KC2RMO up there in Syracuse, and see how Gary is doing this evening. If you're with us, Gary, the microphone is over to you. All right, I guess Gary must be a little late to the party this evening. I'm sure he'll be with us in a little bit. All right, let's go ahead and get things started anyhow. First, I suppose, let's get into the topic at hand. The Internet in general, what it is, what it does, I guess we all know a lot of uses for it, but do we know how it really performs those uses and how to keep ourselves safe while using it? Because those are huge issues that really come up from time to time, and people get their computers infected and shut down. I had an incident I dealt with just late last week or earlier this week pertaining to exactly that. All right, let's go ahead and just give some general information first, I suppose, about what happens when you turn that computer on and you make your connection with the Internet, I guess, just for a little bit of background information. Okay, you turn on your computer, you sit down in front of it, and you make that connection either to your wired network or to your Wi-Fi network, which most of us have in our homes and businesses and vehicles, and the Internet just seems to be everywhere today. And I guess that contributes to leaving us susceptible, depending on where we're connected and how we're connected and all of those things. So I guess the first thing that happens when you request the connection to the various network you're assigned an IP address. And the IP address is basically your digital number, how you're identified on the internet, how other computers around the internet, servers and different connections that you're going to make are all going to require that IP address. As it sits right now, IP version 4 is pretty much the standard, which consists of a number that's divided into four sections. They usually start, if you checked your IP address at home, and that can be done, of course, right now. If you're running Windows, just open up a command prompt by typing CMD in the run box of a Windows machine and type ipconfig, I-P-C-O-N-F-I-G. And if you go ahead and do that, you'll see some numbers appear there. You'll see the IP address, the subnet mask, and a default gateway, along with some other numbers, a MAC address, and I'll get into what a MAC address is in a few minutes. But the IP address, that's the one we're talking about right now. And if you look at it in your home or business, typically it'll start with a 192.168.something and .something else. The 192.168 is pretty much generic to identify an internal network. So that's computers that are behind your main firewall, your main modem from your internet service provider. And then the third section is pretty much the subnet that you're on. So normally it'll be like a 1 or a 2 or something to that effect. That pretty much just identifies the little subnet around your house. So all computers, pretty much, unless you do some advanced configuration, will have this third section being the same as what your router's IP would be and all other computers on your network. So then the fourth section of the IP address is going to identify the specific computer. They usually start with a range. Your router would normally have a 0 or a 1 for its final section for its IP, so your router would normally be, and you'll know what this is if you look at the number for default gateway. That'll be the IP address of your modem. So typically it's 192.168. Let's say 2 or 1, then at the end a .1 to specify, or .100 to specify, the starting range of IP addresses to be assigned by your modem. So then your IP address would typically be higher than that number. So that pretty much outlines the IP addressing system through your home network. Now, in regard to IP addresses, you're only given one actual internet IP address for your home or business. And that could be literally anything under the sun, depending on your area, depending on the service provider. It basically makes it easy that if anyone ever needed to find out, who was on their website or who was passing information, that's how they'd identify you, is through your external IP address, the one address that your internet service provider provides. And then, of course, from there, your router gets assigned that IP address, and it assigns internal IP addresses, and those are the ones, the 192.168 ones that we just discussed. Okay, so next, that IP address that you're getting, the 192.168.whatever, we'll call it .2.2, let's just say, for the starting number inside your home network. That's assigned in one of two ways. It's either assigned by DHCP, which is an acronym for Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol. This is the usual way your modem will assign IP addresses to any new devices that connect to your network. And then from there, the IP addresses are assigned typically in order from the lowest number, being your router's IP address, to all the numbers directly following it. Usually assigned typically in order, and that makes it easy, for you to keep track of devices on your network, and makes it easy as well for new devices that are connected to your network to not have to do any advanced configuration. And that's what I mean if I were to refer to a static IP address. You'd have to assign that yourself, in conjunction with your router. Then you'd have all kinds of other issues coming into play. If it weren't for DHCP, you'd have to choose a number. Then you'd have to make sure there was no conflicting IP addresses on your network. In this day and age, that can get to be a daunting task because we have all kinds of devices, smartphones, tablets, laptops, desktops, now convertibles, and all kinds of other computer technology. So that would be really difficult to go in there and assign an IP address to every single device that connects to your network. And then, of course, for those with kids, their kids' friends are coming over, they want the Wi-Fi code, and their device is going to require an IP. Before you know it, you could have a list. If you check your router's configuration and actually log into your router, or you use a piece of software on your tablet, I recommend Fing, F-I-N-G, like Fox, India, November, Golf, Fing. It will do a network analysis. You install it on your tablet or your smartphone. You can do this right now as I'm talking about it from the Google Play Store on an Android device. That's the quickest way I know to get it, a phone or tablet, and install Fing. And what it will do, it will tell you what your external IP address is, if you ever should need it. And there are reasons why you would need it. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But for the most part, you can see what devices are connected to your network, what names they have, what IP addresses they've been assigned, things like how long they've been connected, how much data they've used. Your router can give you all this information based on all of the IP addresses that the DHCP server built into your router. That's the Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol server that's built into all routers, and it will show you basically what it was doing. And on the other side of things, of course, you can go static. If you're an advanced user and you want to assign the IP addresses yourself in a range that you want to pick or whatever way you want to do it, you can choose to go through DHCP, which is, you know, basically the automatic settings, or you can go with static, the manual way of doing things. And that's pretty much, those numbers are going to be required for connections with servers, be they web servers, email servers, FTP servers, newsgroup servers, data servers. There's so many of these things out there on the internet. Media servers is another type that I run here at home for broadcasting my media around the house. So every time you go to request a connection from a server, the first thing it's going to look for is your IP address to find out who you are, where you are, and keep track of you. So, before we go any further into this stuff, I'll make another call to see if my backup is with us yet, and that's KC2RMO. If you're on the air, sir, over to you, and good evening. Did you hear from Gary today, Kathy, if you're still listening there, to see if he wasn't going to be available this evening, or what's the situation there? Go ahead.
I'll answer that for her. She's just stepped away for a second. She sent an email to Gary to see if he's in trouble. Very unusual for Gary not to be there at the top of the hour. So something's going down, and we'll let you know as soon as we know. Over.
All right, QSL. Well, I'm sure you're there riding along anyway, and perhaps you can pop in from time to time if Gary doesn't show to stimulate conversation. Who knows? Maybe he's still having the clock issue. I know I ran into people throughout the week that had the clock issue, forgot to set something back or whatever, but of course, this day and age, our good old computers take care of most of that stuff for us. All right, at this time, I guess what I will do is take a pause here and ask if there are any questions from the group on what I just discussed in regard to, you know, basic internet configuration, IP addressing, or anything of that nature, or anybody that would just like to come in and say hello at this point. This is VO1UKZ, and you're listening to the monthly TIN Thursday Informational Net on South Garrison.
This is November Zero, Sierra Tango Yankee, Nasty in Akron, Colorado, and don't have a comment, but I am just checking in and letting you know I'm here listening for now.
All right, QSL Nasty, and if you do have any questions or comments or any elaborations on anything we cover this evening, don't hesitate to come back in, and good evening to you as well this evening. All right, we're not hearing any questions thus far, so I guess we can only assume that the explanation up to this point has been sufficient. So let's move on, I guess, to the next topic that I want to cover, and that's the different issues. Of course, we're talking about internet security here tonight, ways to keep yourself safe online, ways to keep your data protected online, and, just make sure you have the best experience possible. In my field of network engineering and network specialization, I run into this stuff quite often, where people are having extreme pop-ups on their computer. They're having massive slowdowns. Their computer is just not the way it was when they first got it. And a lot of this is because when we get on the internet, you know, either you're letting kids use your computers or you yourself, maybe you're not keeping a close enough eye on some of this stuff that's popping up in the web browser. And this pretty much leads to things like spyware and viruses and, you know, Trojans getting into your computer and forwarding your personal data out to different places all over the internet. We're going to discuss next some of these threats, ways to get rid of them, you know, what they do when they're on your system, things of that nature. So let's go ahead and move into the, the issues that we'll run into on the internet, I suppose, is what we could call this. All right, so the first main one that I'll talk about, I suppose, is not, in my opinion, it's not such an issue as it used to be before. So we'll just touch on it briefly, and that, of course, is viruses. Now, a lot of people this day and age still refer to the old term virus, and I've got a virus on my computer. Someone hacked me and put a virus on there. But chances are, this day and age, it's not really viruses anymore so much that we've got to worry about. Now, viruses come in a couple of different types, and I'll cover those now. The first type, I guess, is a, as I just mentioned, is a Trojan, or a Trojan horse, I guess is how it got its original name. And that term, I suppose, goes back to the Greeks and Romans, when they sent a horse up to the gate, and it was full of soldiers, and when the gate opened, the soldiers jumped out and destroyed what was inside. I guess a Trojan virus works in a similar type of way. It's a piece of software typically disguised as something else. You may go to a website looking to download a program, for instance, and you see three or four download buttons. And you're thinking, well, why do they have three or four download buttons? Well, that's to trick you. It's to trick you into clicking on the wrong one and potentially getting a program downloaded into your system that's disguised as the software you wanted. Or maybe it even still is the software that you were looking for in the first place, but it has a Trojan installer wrapped into it. And these things, this day and age, can be wrapped into anything. They could be wrapped into an image, a video file, a program, like I just said. I mean, you don't know what to look for. You really don't know what to look for when it comes to these things. And fortunately, this is not really going on as much as what it used to, because Trojans can be extremely dangerous. They get into your system. They give the writer of the Trojan typically complete access to your system, all your files, your data, unfortunately, the chip, the BIOS chip that, you know, makes it possible for your entire system to run. And then, of course, you've got, you know, any personal data, you know, your credit card information, where you do your shopping, all your keystrokes, every button you press. These Trojans, you know, they're sounding increasingly more dangerous, I know. But fortunately, hackers are not really putting their time and effort so much. Now, don't get me wrong, they're still out there, but not as much as what they used to be. Back in the early days of the Internet, this was the main way hackers would obtain your information or obtain access to your system. So fortunately, that's not really going on a whole lot. I will move on shortly to what is going on a lot after we discuss viruses. So another type of virus is the worm, and this one used to cause a lot of trouble. It really did. And it kind of works like a worm in the sense that it bores holes through all the systems it accesses, and then it replicates itself. And the more systems it gets into, the faster it travels, the bigger it gets, the more power it accumulates, and the more problems it causes, the longer it's in your system. It'll replicate and replicate and replicate till there's literally no space left available on your system, and then with that comes catastrophic failure. And that's pretty much the worm's only purpose, is to cause havoc and anarchy and just make your system not function at the end of the day. And they do have data collection aspects and whatnot too, but they're basically designed just to be nuisances. Just catastrophic failure is the way your system will end if you have a worm. Then next, I suppose, I know there is a third type. There's the Trojan, there's the worm, and there's, I can't even remember the third one off the top of my head. Maybe I should start taking better notes. But anyway, viruses are not the issue that they used to be. So what really we need to do, though, is figure out a way to protect ourselves against them. Even though they're not so prevalent as they used to be, it's still a really damn good idea to have a virus scanning software installed on your computer. And just having one is not enough. You need to maintain it. You need to make sure that it's staying up to date, and you need to make sure it's doing regular scans, just in case. The one that I recommend off the top of my head, and if there's any other recommendations, I'll leave a pause after we discuss the software that I'd recommend to use. And there's others out there. There's, you know, there's some of the big players have got their expensive virus and internet security softwares you can purchase. You've got your McAfee's, you've got your Norton Internet Securities and your Norton 360s and all of these big software suites that you can pay a lot of money for. They claim to do a lot of real fancy stuff, but at the end of the day, do they really keep you safer than something that's free? I say no. And I've been in this game long enough now that I feel that I can comfortably say no and not really. So rather than go out and spend $100 or $150 a year on something you don't really know if it's keeping your computer safe, you can check out a free software, 100% free, called McAfee. Or sorry, not called McAfee. McAfee's one of the expensive ones. Don't mind me here this evening. I took a nap earlier this evening, and perhaps maybe I'm not fully awake from it yet, but I digress. AVG, like Alpha Victor Golf, a virus scanner. Free edition, works just fine. So Google AVG space virus scanner and you'll find it. It's a great piece of software. It does its work. It does what it's supposed to do, and it's not going to cost you a penny. So what you want to do when it comes to your virus scanner, you install it first, obviously. That's a no-brainer. Excuse me. Next, you want to first, right off the bat, after you install your virus scanner, do its update procedure. It has an update software built right into it. You'll see it. It'll be one of the first things that it'll ask you after you install, would you like to go ahead and update your virus definitions? And what your virus definitions are is a list of all known viruses out there, their known behaviors, their virus signatures, you know, just basically so the software knows what it's looking for, knows how to look for it, and when it finds it, it knows what to do with it. And of course, when the software was created, all the viruses that are out now weren't out then. So these virus definition updates are extremely, extremely important. Then, of course, after the virus definition update, what you want to go ahead and you want to do is do a full system scan. Especially if you've been running a computer for a while that doesn't have a virus scanner on it, definitely do that full system scan. It's not so much an issue if you did a format and reinstall on your computer, you've completely wiped Windows out and started fresh, or did a full factory reset on your computer. The full system scan is not really going to be necessary. It is still going to badger you to do it, however, so you may just as well do it, even on a new install. Not that it will find anything on a new install, but of course you never know. There could be something residual. Just want to make sure I wasn't doubling. I did hear some tones going off while I was transmitting. That's the only thing I don't like about this Android app. You can't really monitor the text box while you're transmitting. So anyhow, that is not able to be monitored by me, so maybe Gordon or someone else can relay any text box information that pops up. It would be fantastic. Anyway, after you do this definite virus definition update or virus software update, you're going to want to do that full system scan. Then that, if it does find anything, you'll be given a couple options. You'll be given the option just to delete the file. That may not be advisable depending on which file it is. It may stop your system from functioning altogether. So I wouldn't go with that step right away unless you know what the file is. If it's something you've downloaded recently, you recognize the file name, it's something you don't need or not required for your system, I'd just go ahead and take the high road and completely delete it from your system. Barring that, you know, maybe you can't delete that particular file. You're not sure what it is. Maybe it's got a system 32 in the path of it somewhere. So you just probably want to go and quarantine it. Most of these softwares provide a quarantine option. And what that does, it isolates the file from being able to do any more damage. So should you find anything, go ahead, quarantine it. Look at the virus name. Look it up. There's probably a link right in the software where you can just click on it. It'll give you more information about the virus, what it does, what its danger level is, all of those things. So maybe you'd want to go ahead and look into it further. And if it's something extremely severe, maybe you're going to have no other choice but to delete that file. Maybe your system is so infected that deleting it is the only option. Even if it does corrupt your hard drive, it may still be the only option there is to get rid of the file completely and do a reinstall. hopefully it doesn't come to that, but hopefully now this information this evening will help you with things and, you know, make it so that viruses are not going to bring down your system completely. All right, let's take another pause here at this point and see if there are any questions or comments about virus removal or virus scanning, or maybe someone has some further information they'd like to elaborate on that whole topic. This is VO1UKZ. The name is Daryl. You're listening to the monthly TIN.
Six, Victor.
VO1UKZ, Kilo Alpha 9, Whiskey Delta X-ray.
Ah, touch screens. All right, we've got a couple stations in there. Let's first turn it over to Gordon. KY6V, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to try and bring Bernie aboard. He put some interesting information regarding Avest and what he's been through with that in the text box. So good evening to you, Bernie. I'll steal your thunder. I'll turn it back to Net Control and let him pick you up. KY6V.
All right, let's go ahead and pick Bernie up. Go ahead and go ahead with whatever information you had and past experiences or anything you want to go ahead with there about Avast. And that's one of the other virus softwares, you know, that I mentioned. I think that one actually has a free version and a paid version as well, as, you know, AVG does too. So, all right, Bernie, I'm not sure what the call sign is. It could be a number of Bernies, and I'm not seeing your name coming up on the screen there. So go ahead.
Okay there, Daryl, VO1UKZ, K9WDX. Yeah, it used to be KC9YZR for almost three years, but I went back to my old call sign that was issued back in 1986 as a novice, and then, in 2000 I decided to get out of ham radio, but then 12 and a half years later decided to go back into it again, and now that they dropped the fee for vanity call, I decided to try going back to my old call sign, one that was issued to me the first time, and I got it there, and because I saw that it wasn't reissued to anyone. And of course, since it was more than 2 years since I used it, I could not just go back to it. So, and then of course, I didn't really want to pay every time to renew vanity call, but since they dropped the fee for it, then I just said, okay, I'll go ahead and get my old call sign back. So anyhow, just wanted to say that I like the AVG and I use that, but there was one time when all of a sudden I noticed it wasn't scanning my incoming emails for viruses, and then I received no notices from them at all, no upgrade notices or anything. I upgraded, I check every week or whatever on my own even, but I went to the website and there was something to the effect, I don't know how they worded it anymore. I think I had to install something extra, and what it did is it added an extra tab to, I don't know, whatever they call it, control panel in the AVG software, and I was able to rescan, go back to scanning my email for viruses, so that's why I went over to Avast, or AVAST. But one thing I like about that, of course, with EchoLink, I'm going to reset the timers first. Only thing about that, my audio here, okay, probably a loose connection to my microphone. Anyway, when I'm on a PC that doesn't have, where I'm not using EchoLink, because on the EchoLink one, I blocked all the Windows sounds, I went into the sound scheme and I shut off, I set the sound scheme to no sounds instead of the Windows sounds, so somebody would send a text message right now, you won't hear the tones coming over the air over the echoing system because I got that shut off or muted. But when I'm using a PC that doesn't have echoing in it going, what I liked about it is it'll say that the virus database has been updated or something like that. It's got those voice notifications. Although right now I'm not using Avast either because my netbook and also my PC here is not even using Windows. I'm using Linux Mint, so I can't even really talk about that. But anyway, when Avast just all of a sudden stopped scanning my email for viruses, I went over to Avast, and I've liked that one ever since. So that's all I wanted to throw in there. So back to you, Daryl, VO1UKZ, K89WDX.
Yeah, QSL Bernie, yeah, that's what screwed me up was your old call sign, and I wasn't seeing that call sign on the screen there is what the issue was. and I wasn't yet familiar with the new call sign. I do remember, though, when you mentioned that you were going after your original one over on the other net there, so I'm glad that that worked out for you, and you got it all processed through Echolink and everything. So, yeah, there are, like you say, other softwares out there. AVG is just the first one that comes to mind. It's one of the more widely used ones, so I figured that would be an okay direction to point people in. But yeah, Avast is a good one. There's, your Norton ones, your McAfee ones, they're the two mainstreamers, I guess you could say. But then there's other ones, PC Security and different types of ones that'll do, you know, viruses and spyware. I personally prefer independent programs to monitor those types of things in regard to, you know, viruses and spyware. Spyware is the next thing we're going to get into, and that's more so of a thing to worry about this day and age, because hackers are developing it left, right, and center. There seems to be no end to the numbers of pieces of this stuff that come out every single day, literally. And a lot of these are coming from countries where they can't be tracked, coming out of China, coming out of Russia, coming out of Japan, places where it's just there's such a population. The United States government has no jurisdiction in these places, so the criminals and writers of spyware, and it is what it is. I mean, it's spyware. It gets into your system. It can be obtained in very, very similar ways to viruses. But typically, like I said earlier, a virus has to be downloaded in some way, shape, or form from a website, from an email attachment, or whatever. Spyware is a whole different animal altogether. It can get into your system without you even realizing it, just from browsing around websites, from a thing popping up on the screen that you didn't request, from being tied into another piece of software that you download, something accidentally that you click on. Search bars, for instance, are notorious for these things. If you're installing a software and it comes with a search bar attached to it, don't usually install those things because they could have any level of spyware built into them. And what spyware is going to do when it gets into your system, it's going to monitor your system for any key factors. It's going to look for those credit card numbers, those expiry dates, those online purchase receipts. It's going to capture keystrokes, similar to the way a Trojan would do that, but it does it in a far more malicious and far more secretive way. It usually won't damage your computer itself, because if it damages the computer like a virus would, then it's not going to pass back the information that the spyware creators want. And they definitely want that information. You would be absolutely shocked to know what they do with your information that's gathered up. They compile it into lists, massive, massive lists of thousands and thousands of credit card numbers and corresponding names, social security numbers or social insurance numbers if you're in Canada. And then these hackers sell or post these massive lists online in areas of the deep web where they can be found by the criminal element that desire them. And that makes it incredibly, incredibly unsafe for the average user to be online. Because if you don't know what to look for, if you don't know the activities, the signs, and symptoms to look for when it comes to this stuff, you're probably not even going to know it's there until the symptoms get just bad enough when you're so heavily infected with spyware that there's nothing you can really do about it anyway other than completely blank out your computer and possibly lose any data. Then you've got to go changing email addresses and passwords and shutting down accounts and all kinds of different stuff. I've seen so many things happen over the years when it comes to spyware. It's just absolutely incredible what it does. You know, it could get to the point where your computer could absolutely shut down and you can't do a damn thing with it because there's so, so many aspects of spyware in your system. So, once you get some spyware on your computer, how do you tell? What are the things to look out for? First thing I'd say would probably be pop-ups. If you're getting an ungodly amount of pop-ups coming up on your computer, you know, showing the various things for adult websites, for assistive aids, let's just call them, and, you know, various other things that you probably never would have requested in a million years, but you're getting them up on your computer, chances are you've got some type or some level of spyware infection. And it's an extremely good idea to get on top of this right away and get it off your system. Now, I know that, again, there's a lot of different software packages out there that will accomplish this. The one that I prefer myself is SpyBot Search and Destroy. It is a piece of software that's extremely comprehensive. It's constantly being updated. It's constantly being maintained by its creators, by the general community, in the methods of posting and familiarizing people with different aspects of spyware. And what it does, it's similar to a virus scanner in the sense that it looks for all known spyware packages, let's just call them, that are out there on the internet. It accumulates a list of all of those. Then it will download all your updates, of course. Well, you'll have to download the updates the first time, but you can set it to do so on its own afterwards. And then, of course, it does an immunization. And what an immunization is basically like it is for humans. It's a protection. It's a shot in the arm that gives your computer the list that's available of spyware. It blocks down all the known ways that the spyware would get into your system to start with. And then after that's done, you go ahead, do a full system scan. I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts right now, if you download SpyBot Search and Destroy, you do your updates, of course, that's the first thing you're going to want to do, is do the update. Because what that's going to do, again, like the viruses, it's going to give you some information that it's going to give your computer the information, the current list of everything that's available up until the date of the update's creation. Then once you get that update downloaded on your computer, what you're going to want to do is do the immunization. That's a very, very important step, because once the update tells SpyBot Search and Destroy what is out there on the internet and what is available, then it's going to put up that wall, that protective barrier for all of those known spyware packages. So do the immunization. And you're going to want to follow these steps each and every week. I recommend doing it once a week, just so you can keep a good handle on what's going on your machine. Do the update, then do the immunization. After the immunization is up, you'll notice that the number of protected against items goes way up, and your number of unprotected items, parents and tones going off in the background. I guess there's some activity in the text box. So at this point, I'm going to take a pause to see if there are any stations that would like to come in with any questions, comments. If you just want to jump in and say hello, any information or elaborations on anything that I said are definitely welcome. This is VO1UKZ. You're listening to the Thursday Informational Net here on South Ferris.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Kilo 2 Hotel Alpha.
And 6 Victor.
Okay, and Whiskey Delta X-Ray.
Absolutely fantastic. I was starting to wonder, looking at my list here, if I was going to be able to ramble on for 2 hours here this evening, but I was starting to have my doubts. We're at the 40-minute mark, so, you know, we're almost halfway through, but I'm a little more than halfway through the info that I had here, so I got a few more topics I can cover. So let's go ahead and pick up Rick, N1VXP. How's everything with you tonight, Rick?
This is N1VXP. Oh, not doing too bad. Just got a really strange weather. We're in a red flag warning. Not something you'd normally think of in the spring or winter. Especially when the temperature only got up to about 65 for a high today. But we've had about 23 to 27% humidity, and definitely very dry. And winds, anywhere from, I think it was like 20-something miles an hour to about 30. So very windy, very dry, and not something I normally think about for this time of the year. I had an issue with my laptop. Somehow, I pretty well stayed on Windows 8.1, and all of a sudden, I had these couple of websites pop up, and then they went into a loop. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? So I couldn't get out of the loop, couldn't get back to my home page. I said, uh-oh, I got a problem. I'll admit I didn't update my antivirus the way I should have. But fortunately, I had one little step that seemed to help in mind. I had not even upgraded to Windows 10. Let me drop for a second. I ended up finally upgrading to Windows 10. Went through the 3.5 or 4 hours of waiting for that to get done. And a couple of days of other stuff that had to be put in gradual. But it seems that that's eliminated the problems. And part of my other problem was somehow I couldn't, with the Windows 8.1, I couldn't access into updating the drivers. Well, Windows 10 eliminated that problem. I seem to have everything working quite well. Still have a few little glitches that not really sure what to do on, but they're minor. But as far as I also have a smartphone, and I found that a couple of the apps I downloaded, they kept popping up this, recommended this, that, kind of little pop-ups. But the fortunate thing about the smartphone is you can stop that. You don't really have to have antivirus program. It's just a command in there to shut off the advisement. And that seems to work quite well as well. Very happy with the smartphone. And also put CC Cleaner for a app in there, and that seemed to work out quite well. So between the two, I really seem to have a lot of fun. Let me drop a second. It's just my next thing is definitely I think I should definitely look into that AVG software for the laptop, get that installed, and get the updates. And back to the smartphone. The only thing I don't like about the smartphone is all software updates require that you go on to Wi-Fi. They won't allow you to do it on network, so you have to use Wi-Fi. And my problem is that some of the Wi-Fi connections out there are not up to date, and very slow on the as far as the web connection. So I guess that's all has to do with bandwidth. But something my neighbor allowed me to get on his, and I seem to work out pretty good with his. Back to you, VK1UKZN1TXV.
Okay, Rick, and hello to you, Gary, and thanks for joining us this evening. Got a couple of stations up here, and then I'll call you in right after N0STY. Yeah, you raised a good point there, Rick, and I just added it to my notes. I'll go ahead and continue with taking these other stations, but you raised a good point, and I didn't intend on talking about it. But smartphone infections are something else to look out for. So I've made a note there to get into that topic as well. So thanks very much for that and making that idea pop into my head there for sure. All right, next we've got Kilo 2, Hotel Alpha. Good evening to you, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Good evening from beautiful Winter Springs, Florida, in 86 degrees today. I use Firefox, and inside of Firefox, I use NoScript, and that constantly monitors every connection that I do on the internet, and I can choose which, I can block or choose to go to any one of the sometimes 20 or 30 scripts that are running from different sites and block them all or just the one I want. And I find it very useful. Sometimes it gets in the way of videos, but it works great. Just a thought. This is Fred. That's NoScript.
Now, that's one I'm not familiar with myself, actually. I know that scripts on websites a lot of times are ways that different spyware can get into your system. So that's probably a good way to block it right from the root. But it's good that you can keep an eye on all the ones that are running and being requested, because there are a lot of scripts on websites, especially this day and age, that are required for the functioning of that site and for information and forms and things like that to work. And I'm guessing if you're doing either bit of web surfing at all, I'm guessing you're probably getting a lot of script notifications coming up in that software. That's why I like SpyBot. It just looks for the ones that are necessary for the the system to do what it needs to do in keeping malicious stuff out of your system. So thanks for that very much, though. I much appreciate it for sure. Any information we can get out to the public on this kind of stuff is a benefit, because there's just so much nuisance software out there right now that does so much negative things to your computer and smartphone and tablet and whatever else. So it's great to get all the information out there that we can, for sure. So again, thanks for that, N2HA. All right, next we've got KY6V. Hello again, Gordon.
Yeah, thanks, Daryl. KY6V here. Hey, nice get-together here this evening. Good information. I just wanted to support Avest. I've been using it for about probably 5 years or better. Been very, very happy with it. I was a Norton man for a number of years. I got annoyed at that bill coming, you know, once a year. For one reason, but I also found, and I'm sure that they've probably smartened up their act, but their earlier programs were very computer heavy in the respect that it was very demanding. It slowed down the machines, so on and so forth. I got very unhappy with that aspect. Was one reason that I went to Avest, and I'm really pleased that I did. So I just wanted to throw that in. I don't want to go back and retrogress on static IP addresses, but I found that it is necessary in some families where the DHCP server and the router is doing all the work, and the man of the household is using Echolink, and he's set up his ports properly for the three ports that are necessary. Let me buy a nickel. And then he turns his computer off, you know, when he goes to sleep that night. His wife gets up first. She turns on her computer, and the DHCP gives her the address, internal address, that he had yesterday, and now he can't work Echolink. Need I say any more? Hey, I thought that Fred was going to pick this up, but you want to pick up Nasty, N0STY. He's saying in the text box that for some reason we're timing out the IRLP system. Now, this server is set for 3 minutes. I'm not seeing anything on the server on this end, Nasty, but let's find out what's going on, and maybe that timer is a little short on the IRLP. I wonder if you know what it's set at. Back to you, Daryl, KY6V, and hello, Gary.
Yeah, QSO, I did monitor the text box there while other stations were transmitting, and I did see that come up. Now, I know I did time out once on here, but I caught it quick enough so that no one probably even really noticed. I've been doing my best to keep an eye on a three-minute timer, but, you know, we all win the Purple Crystal Award from time to time, so that can be forgiven in moderation, I suppose. But, yes, I'm not sure if we continuously are timing it out what's happening. But, yeah, there was probably once in there when I did time out, but I'm trying to drop it. Even though I'm not saying I'm dropping it, I still do, because I find, saying, especially where I'm doing a lot of talking here this evening, if I say every 2 minutes, let me drop it, let me drop it, let me drop it, then that comes up in the podcast. So I figure from listening to these things, I always go back when I'm running that on here and I always download the podcast the next day and have a listen, and I'm always hearing myself saying, let me drop it, let me drop it. So I figured this time I'll just, you know, drop it now and then and not even say it, like just now. So whatever works. I guess you learn a few tricks over the years. But next we have Bernie, a Whiskey Delta X-ray. Welcome back, Bernie. Go ahead.
Okay, VO1UKZ, K9WDX. Okay, Darrell, and yeah, some wide range of stuff to mention there, too. One person mentioned the browser, you know, Firefox and whatever. It's been quite some time since I've used Windows, so I got to go by kind of by memory. I'm not sure what program I use to block the pop-ups. I know a lot of times I'd be trying to just enter a text message on some site, and all of a sudden I'd have to close four or five pop-ups sometimes. I think it was AdBlock Plus or AdBlocker Plus or something like that. I don't know. It was a Firefox add-on that would block most pop-ups. There was one time, though, I think it was AdWare or something trying to run in the background, but even though I had, you know, even though I couldn't see it because it was blocked, it was still trying to operate. So I just said, I'm going to shut that off and see what's going on here, because my computer seems to be running very slowly in the browser. And here it turns out, when I opened it up and let the blocked pop-up go, here it was some sort of worldwide announcement saying that this certain movie is going to come out on a certain date, and preview of a movie, you know, and was trying to run a trailer on my computer. So I ran a bunch of different programs. You mentioned SpyBot. I was running SpyBot. I remember that. And I think one called Spyware Blaster, and also AdAware. I was running AD-AWARE or something like that, AdAware. And I also was running, I did try Microsoft Security Essentials and Windows Defender, that sort of thing. But let's see what else. Long before Microsoft had a firewall program built into the operating system, I was running Zone Alarm. I used to like that program for a firewall, Zone Alarm, and reset. Okay, I don't know. I think maybe somebody had thrown a carrier over here. Unless it was my Echolink node coming up. That was some of the stuff there. Zone Alarm for a firewall. I like that program. And let's see what else was there. Something else. I don't know. I should have jotted it down. Sometimes just jotting down one word on a piece of paper will be enough to remind me of what all I wanted to say there. But by the time everybody else makes their comments, I kind of forget some of the stuff I wanted to say. That's about all I can think of right now. I suppose it'll be something later on. I don't know. VO1UKZ, K9WDX.
Yeah, QSL, Bernie. Well, jump back in anytime you want, of course. And yeah, just from Bernie's over, there is tons and tons and tons of software available that does this stuff. And I mean, if you go and install multiple ones, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to have nothing but trouble. So if you want to check in, you know, check out a particular spyware software or whatever, install one at a time. By my God, just install one at a time. Or you won't even be able to get on the internet, I can tell you. It'll block things up so tight that you won't even be able to use your machine. So if you're going to try any of those other mentioned titles, just make sure that it's the only one running, or you're going to have some serious, serious problems. If you install three or four or five of these things, you're probably not even going to be able to get online. Things are going to be blocked up. Then they're going to be detecting each other as potential risks. That's another thing that you'll run into. Bernie mentioned another good point as well, and that's pop-up blockers. I will talk about those a little bit as well, and why they are in some cases good and why they aren't in other cases good. So good point as well, Bernie, and I'll get into those a little bit too. All right, let's go ahead and pick up Nasty, N0STY. Go ahead.
All right, thank you both for acknowledging me and I put down in the text box. This is November Zeros here at Tango Yankee. My name is Nasty, and I'm in Akron, Colorado, out on the northeastern plains. Believe it or not, we're having, like, kind of snow things going on here in Colorado today after all this 75-degree weather. Anyway, about the IRLP node, I did just shoot an email to the owner of that particular node. I'm not sure what's going on because I've never heard this repeater timeout, and I never hear the Echolink side of this node timeout because I'm still on the same repeater. So It's just an echo IRLP. I heard you time out twice via IRLP. On my end, it just cuts out, and it'll stay cut out until you fully drop on your end, and then it'll pick back up, which sometimes takes a while. However, on EchoLink, I don't have any problems, so I just dialed it up via the EchoLink side of the node instead, and thus far, no issue. Pop-ups. This is really great. So Windows 10 comes along. I have no problem with it. Very, very nice computer. You know, it's an Asus gaming computer with the i7, blah, blah, blah. Fast, capable, 3 terabytes. I never had any problems until I installed something for the Chrome, and it allows you to use other applications on Chrome, and I'm going to go ahead and break for a moment. And so I installed this Chrome application runner for Internet Explorer. It was to use Internet Explorer stuff on your Chrome application. And it was so that I could use AllStar via the web transceiver, because Chrome does not use Java. AllStar transceiver required Java. Internet Explorer wasn't doing it directly for me, so I put the Internet Explorer on the Chrome app, which then allowed me to use Java, put in some exceptions for security, and ta-da, I have a problem. Pretty much every third time I try to open a new window or click on a link, I have a little deal that pops up that says, you need to update this, or you need to update that, and it tries to pretend that it's coming from my internet provider or for one of my programs or something like that. And basically you click close, it says, oh, you can't do that. You click the X on that, and then it says, do you really want to leave the page? You click on that, and then finally you're out of it. So I did install Avast, and I actually just paid for 3 years of Avast for the premium service. And hopefully that'll help me get this worked out. Otherwise, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And ZeroSTY, back to you, Net Control.
Well, when it comes to web browsers, that's just another hairy situation, really. And it comes down to preference at the end of the day, I suppose. And it all boils down to what's going to work for you as a user. I use Google Chrome myself. Fortunately, everything that I require, or pretty much everything I require, I can get by with Chrome. I really don't like Internet Explorer. A lot of people don't. And Microsoft tried to pull a fast one when it comes to Internet Explorer. In Windows 10, they've renamed it, kind of, and I see that really, they haven't really done a whole lot other than rename it and add a couple of little, well, I guess they call them features. But in regard to Microsoft Edge, which is the new browser, I'd stay away from that one too, to be honest. If you can't get away with using Google Chrome for everything, then I'd recommend Firefox, but on a newer computer, Google Chrome just integrates the Google services so nicely. And I use a number of Android devices as well, and they kind of cross-platform nicely when you're using Google Chrome on your Android device and your PC. Your favorites transfer over. It does all kinds of neat little things that I like. So fortunately, I don't have to use multiple browsers very often, but if I do, it's Google Chrome as a primary and Firefox as a backup, never a Microsoft browser. They just, I don't know. They they've been in the game a long, long time. You think they would get their act together when it comes to a decent browser. And they've made an attempt, you know, with Edge, but still, not for me. I'd rather have Ruffles. Anyway, next let's go ahead and pick up Gary, KC2, RMO. A little late to the party this evening, but better late than never. Go ahead and good evening.
Hey, thank you, sir. And hello, Daryl. Hello, Gordon. Hello, everybody. Yeah, I'm late. I'm a victim of too much corned beef and cabbage, seriously. And the week before spring break at SUNY Oswego, I honestly forgot all about it this tonight. We went out to dinner. I had some amazing corned beef and cabbage at Ernie's Lakeside. And I got home. I was, I was just going to lie down. I wasn't even thinking. So here I am anyway. And it's been a great program so far, Daryl. And I'm kind of coming in at this point. I've been hearing the conversation about a number of different things, antivirus software and browsers, what have you. I have been a big fan of AdAware. I've used that for a lot. I think on the Windows machines, my go-to combination is I do use Windows Defender. That seems to work very well for me. And I also scan weekly with AdAware, and that I have no problems at all with what I've got. I heard a couple of people mention Avast. I was never a fan of that until a couple of years ago. And I was looking for something that would work on the Macs, because as good as Macs are for being virus resistant, or I should say probably there's fewer available viruses for the Mac, you still need some sort of antivirus. So I did put Avast on the Macs, and that's worked very well. Let me buy a nickel here. So that's been a good combination for me. Chrome, I'm kind of the opposite of where you are, Daryl. I was using Chrome for a while, and it's a good browser, without a doubt. It has a lot of features that are very handy. And I don't know really whether it was just my own particular preference or what, but I just never felt comfortable with it, you know. So I went back to Firefox, and that's what I'm using now on all the machines, with Chrome as my secondary. So that's worked out well for me. And you're absolutely right, or I agree with you anyway, 100%. It really gets down to a matter of preference. You know, what do you feel good about running, and really stay away from Edge or or Explorer. That's good advice for everybody. I did want to hear some comment, Daryl, maybe if you could. One of the things that I have noticed on my Windows machine, on my Windows 10 machine, and I just put 10 on this beast, is that I am having trouble with scripts. Okay, I do see pages freezing because of badly running scripts, and I kind of got back to what was going a little deeper into that. That is, apparently some of these scripts conflict with the AMD driver for my video card. Now, that's not a terrible thing, because my video card fan is going, and I have a new one I'm going to put in here, and it's an NVIDIA card, so, you know, it's like, I'm hoping I'm going to eliminate that problem, but scripting does cause its fair share of problems, and security-wise and performance-wise, so maybe you could get a little deeper into that. Anyway, great to be here. I'm enjoying what I'm hearing so far, and it sounds like a really, really good net, and we'll send it back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Yeah, QSO, Gary, you mentioned a good point that time, and I'm not in a position to cover it, but perhaps a little bit later in the program, you could come back in and talk to us a little bit more about situations with Macs, because that's not something that I'm in a position to cover at all. As everyone knows that knows me and have gotten to know me over the years, I'm strictly non-Mac. Whether it's mobile devices, laptops, desktops, I just don't like Mac's operating systems. I really don't. It's no secret. You know, it's definitely not a secret that I don't like them. And maybe you could come back in a bit later and fill us in on any issues that maybe you have had with Macs over the years, or recommendations that you could make to the group in regard to, you know, protecting a Mac or keeping it safe. I know you did mention Avast, and, you know, that's all good. But in regard to spyware, because, you know, spyware still must be able to sneak into Macs through browsers, and that's how we mostly get a lot of it on the Windows side, is through scripts and through, different things that pop up in browsers. They sneak their way in through the back door, you know, to use a term like that, I suppose, loosely. But, you know, they really are an issue. And scripts, yes, in a lot of cases do cause issues. And this is another reason why I recommend SpyBot Search and Destroy. This thing literally looks for hundreds of thousands of known instances, and they include, to a large extent, scripts. You know, the malicious ones anyway. There are a lot of scripts that do run, and of course, for anyone that doesn't know, a script is basically a series of commands executed when you go to a website, in most cases that allow the website to perform properly. And in most cases, scripts are definitely a good thing. They make the internet pretty. They make the, you know, different aspects of websites function properly. So to a large extent, they are a huge part of the internet. But what happens when you get the bad one? You know, you get the scatter script that's going to be performing malicious activity. Maybe it's telling your, you know, your registry protection to temporarily turn itself off so things can sneak in that way. Or, you know, they could be doing all kinds of things in the background, and that's just the thing. They're running in the background. You hardly ever see them, unless, or you see their performance, their output, you know, their result, but you don't see the script itself. So programs like SpyBot Search and Destroy, maybe Malwarebytes or AdAware, you know, maybe they do similar things, and I'm sure they do, but they maintain an accurate database of these things, and then the program goes ahead and makes its best attempt at making a block on them. So I still highly recommend SpyBot Search and Destroy as one of your primary tools for fighting spyware that sneaks in through scripts. So, with that said, there's not really a whole lot more I can do to talk about them. You know, they run. They're going to continue to run. If you just go and block them all, you're not going to get the internet experience that you want or that you're used to. So controlling them with a program that's designed to prevent spyware from getting into your system is probably the best course of action to take. Now, there's something that's not on my list of notes here this evening, but it's a topic that came up from one of the stations that checked in here, and that's smartphones and tablets and the protection of those devices. Now, I hadn't intended on covering it, so I'm not going to get into it too deeply, but still, along the same type of lines, I use Lookout Personal Security, and what it does, it provides on Android devices. I'm not sure if they offer a variant for iPhones and iPads and iPod touches and all of those iDevices. But for Android devices, which cover the majority of the blanket of the marketplace this day and age when it comes to smartphones and tablets, Lookout is a fantastic piece of software. And it falls right in line with the whole internet security thing and keeping yourself safe and keeping your devices safe as well. Because not only will it keep an eye on what's called riskware on portable devices, which is basically spyware, you know, Trojans, that type of thing, but they blanket it on Android devices as riskware. And what that includes is some of the similar things that happen with PCs, you know, slowdown, transfer of your personal data to third-party sources, you know, different things like that. And having a program like Lookout on your tablet or your smartphone, when you first install it, it'll take a blanket look at all your applications. It'll identify the ones that it sees as riskware. Often third-party apps, things that didn't come from the Google Play Store, will identify as riskware. Not because they're bad, just because the software is not familiar with their originating location. So in that case, it's up to you to keep an eye on third-party software that you install that doesn't come from the Google Play Store or your various app stores. And then once you weed out, you know, you tell it to ignore certain things that you know are good because, you know, you've used them for years and whatnot. And that's another thing, I suppose, and I keep crossing over myself here, but there's so much to talk about in this regard. Flashlight apps, for instance. If you downloaded and installed the Flashlight app to your device, I would take a serious look at it and what it's doing behind the scenes, because Flashlight apps, believe it or not, contain spyware, and they are nasty for it. They really, really are bad pieces of software. 9 out of 10, there was a study done. I wish I had the URL in front of me so I could fill you guys in on what it is. But there was a study done, and I don't know if you're familiar with this one, Gary. If you are, maybe you could bang something into the text box. But Flashlight apps, there was 10 of the most popular ones tested, and 9 of them was determined that you shouldn't even put them on your computer because they forward that much of your private information back to the creator of flashlight apps. And, you know, that's something you wouldn't expect. You turn on the flashlight for a bit of light while you're getting out of your car, going to your house, and your data could be flooding out to the internet. So you really, really want to take a hard look when you're installing mobile apps on what permissions you're given to the mobile app. Newer versions of Android have really gotten particular and given you the ability to control this stuff very, very tightly because it's necessary. Some apps you download, you may be clicking accept and allowing them access to your contact lists, email addresses, Facebook profiles, Google Now accounts, you name it, you may be authorizing something as simple as a flashlight app access to all of this information when, in actuality, the only thing it needs access to is your camera for the simple reason of the flash. The flash, unfortunately, is grouped in with access to your camera, so it is going to need that access to turn on the LED to use it as a flashlight. But fortunately, smartphone and tablet manufacturers have gotten on the ball and included a little settings add-on that allows you to turn on the LED. So you don't need a third-party flashlight app for newer devices, fortunately. But other than that, just try Lookout Personal Security. It has another feature that's really good as well that falls in line. And that aspect is the ability to find and locate your device. You know, a lot of people lose smartphones and tablets and things like that. And they're like, oh my, I just spent, you know, $500, $600, $700, $800, $1,000 for this device, and now it's lost somewhere, or someone has stolen it. What am I going to do? You know, buy a new one, pretty much. Or you could try something like Lookout Personal Security, and that will give you the ability to go to another computer or smartphone or tablet, open a web browser, and log in and locate that device on a map. So then, okay, you've got it located. You know its approximate area within a few meters. You know, it could be down between the couch cushions. So if it shows your address on the app, you can make it scream. You make a, you know, a siren noise come out of your device remotely. All kinds of different little features for locating your lost or stolen device, which could in itself be a huge, huge risk to personal security and personal data and everything else. And we're going to get into talking a little bit more about smartphones and how your data could possibly be unsecure as we move around a little bit later in the program. All right. Next, I will cover briefly pop-ups and pop-up blockers. Okay. Some websites require to scatter a little pop-up when you first go on the site for to provide you with information, provide you with a login screen. So completely blocking them is probably not really a great idea because some things require a little bit of info to pop up, or for a script to run, it runs in a pop-up or something to that effect. So they're not always bad. Most of the time, yes, they're not really cool because you get a lot of them coming up. You get a lot of things displaying on your screen. You get some things that maybe you didn't want to see or didn't want to request or damn well wouldn't want your kids to see. So pop-up blockers, wide and large, have been used for years. And they are pretty much a good thing to use because they stop a lot of the things that would pop up and then potentially let spyware into your computer from the popped up page. Ugh, that's a mouthful. Anyway, I'm going to take a little pause again right now, see if we've got any questions or comments or concerns or anything on any of this information that I've mentioned, and see if we can't stimulate a little more activity in here tonight. This is VO1UKZ, and you're listening to the Thursday Informational Net on Southcast.
Victor X-Ray Pop with a comment.
And RMO.
VOK and Whiskey Delta X-Ray.
Excellent. We've got three stations in there, and that recognizes VXP, RMO, and WDX. So let's go ahead and call in Rick, N1VXP. Go ahead.
Very good, N1VXP. Somebody mentioned about AMD video driver. Well, I'm having that same issue with Windows 10. It says something like it's not able to work. Apparently, I guess maybe it's a driver issue that Windows 10 does not recognize. So I've just left it every time I turn the computer on. That's when it comes up with that little warning, but Otherwise, everything else seems to work okay. But I just was kind of surprised to see basically the first one, and then it mentioned about, you know, every day that I've turned the computer on, it gives me a little log of it. So definitely have to figure that one out. It almost makes it sound like it wants me to, I don't know, if they want me to drop it as far as the program or what the story is. But just kind of a little, brought up a big old flag in my mind saying, wow, I had that issue and I got to figure it out. Anyway, I'm going to have to back out here in about 10 minutes. I got another net to go to, and that may be a short one, and if you're still on, I will definitely be back. VO1UKZ and 1VXV.
Just to clarify, I'm trying to do a little bit of research here in the background. You guys are mentioning you're having problems with AMD video cards. I'm not real familiar with AMD video cards. I know ATI video cards. Is that what you mean, ATI video cards, or is it onboard something with an AMD board?
Let me just jump in here for a second, Daryl. It's AMD. Advanced Micro Devices. And what's interesting, I was saying the same thing when I first was getting that, it shouldn't, I didn't think AMD was involved with video cards. Now, I have an HP, this is an HP High Performance Pavilion, and the video card in there, I'm not really sure what chip is on there. It could be an AMD chip on that, and that may be where all this is originating from. I'm not sure. That was a real surprise for me, too. So I'm making the assumption that there's an AMD chip on the video card. I will tell you this, that as soon as I get this last... this last project in, which is one page away from completion, I'm going to be shutting the machine down and popping the NVIDIA card in there. So if that goes away, that's the solution. But my guess, Rick, is that it's a driver issue, that AMD needs to do a little work on their drivers, even though, you know, everything's supposed to be Windows 10 happy. It's not necessarily so. So and it's funny the way you see it at login. I see it when I try to go on some websites. Some scripts tend to conflict with it, I guess. So but your mileage may vary, but I do suspect it's a driver issue. Anyway, back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Yeah, QSO. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with it myself, to be honest. Most of the machines that I have here have Intel chipsets. I haven't actually used or come across an AMD chipset in a long time. Quite a long time. Most people now are going with Intel in their equipment, which is a blessing, really, I suppose. Intel has been doing it right for a lot of years, and it's about time that a lot of the mainstream manufacturers started going with the... they're slightly more expensive for chips, but the compatibility level is a lot higher. AMD have been known for issues with Windows since the older, 1500 series CPUs and whatnot, in Windows 95 and Windows 98. I mean, I remember having configuration issues with AMD boards back then. So I just recommend Intel Inside or Android. So that's that. But did you have anything else, Gary? Because I know even before that AMD issue came up, we did have you on the list here to go after Rick. So did you have anything else to comment on? Go ahead.
Thanks, Daryl. Yeah, just a couple things real quick. The processor in the in this particular unit in my pavilion is an i7. I mean, it's Intel, but I think that the video processor, the chip on the video card, might be AMD, and I don't know. I really don't know. I know this is the third video card that I've replaced in this thing in 3 years, and it's getting kind of old, but I think it's always been fan failure, but this is something different. And anyway, so I'm putting a fanless card anyway, so that's scheduled for tomorrow. What really surprised, you surprised the dickens out of me here, sir, was that flashlight app thing. I never heard of that, and I have one of these on my phone. I have a Droid phone, and it's going off. It's coming off as soon as I can get off the air. I didn't know that. I had never heard that before, so you really opened my eyes on that one. Really, when you think about it, yeah, it's a nice little handy thing to have, but if all you need to do is see the keyhole in the door, the light from the screen ought to light it up enough for that anyway. So who needs it, right? You know, I was very, very much surprised to hear that. And then the last comment that I had was really pretty much a general observation, and that's like, you know, we do have to be very, very careful about what we're doing when we install software. You know, it's never been as bad as it is right now for just people trying to get into your machine and get whatever the heck they want out of it. It's just it's ridiculous. It really is. So it's kind of like the X-Files, trust no one, right? Read what that thing is saying. Read that EULA, or, you know, nobody can read a EULA, but read it through enough, or check those check boxes that you're checking to make sure that you're not giving somebody, you know, permission just to, like, you know, trash your machine, because really a lot of situations you're actually doing that. So be aware. Anyway, back to the net, KC2RMO.
I'm going to start leaving some longer spaces in here. I am trying to drop it every so often, but I did notice one more time out there in the text box. So hopefully I'm resetting this thing enough. Like I said, I'm not saying I'm doing it, but I'm trying to do it. So, well, if the flashlight app thing surprised you, Gary, check this out on Google, man. I'm not even kidding you. Check it out. It surprised the heck out of me, too. And if you go into your application manager right now on that Android device, and you click that flashlight app, and you scroll down to the bottom, and you look at permissions, you look at what you're giving that thing access to, it'll blow your mind. I bet there's about 6 or 8 things that it has access to right now. And the scary thing about it, buddy, I'm telling you, uninstalling the app may not do it. I'm very sorry to tell you that you may actually have to do a factory reset on your phone. They really do a good job on getting these little lines of code into your mobile device when you install one of these flashlight apps. And this is just the thing that's well known for it. There's a lot of other things out there that do the same thing, but flashlight apps are notorious for it. So just go into the application manager, click on the flashlight app, scroll down to the bottom, and look at what it has permission to do on your device. And I bet that'll shock you in itself. But then you want to Google the particular flashlight app you have for issues and find out if that's one of the ones that just uninstalling the app. And before you uninstall it, by the way, scroll down a little ways and you'll see clear cache, clear history, all that in the app as well. Clear those before you uninstall it, and then uninstall it. You may be okay, but it may be one of the real bad ones. If it's one of the highest downloaded ones on the Play Store, you know, the first flashlight app that you saw and you liked it and you downloaded it, chances are that could really be the bad one. If it's the one that has the ability to change your screen, multiple colors and all this, little flashy things, yeah, that's the bad one. That's the real, real bad one. And, yeah, you want to get that off your system and do a factory reset ASAP. Your data could already be compromised. Security risk. Flashlight apps are very, very bad. Anyway, next we have Whiskey Delta X-Ray. Welcome back, Bernie.
Okay, there, VO1 UKZ KA9WDX. You're mentioning flashlight app and, I don't know, spyware, whatever it's supposed to probably include there. I even heard the discussion on the internet, or seen a discussion on the internet where they were wondering whether the Windows 10 operating system itself had spyware in it. But, and who was it? I
I think he's probably gone now to the internet, in one of the XP. Anyhow, he had mentioned about something that reminded me of one time when something didn't work right, and what I ended up doing is I went to the control panel, and I listed up the devices, all the devices in your system, you know, that list, and expanded it and everything. And I right-clicked, I think, on the display, and then I chose the update driver, and then it asked me if I wanted to search the internet for drivers. I said, yeah. And then after I updated the driver, it worked just fine. Although sometimes something that was working stopped working, and then I just have to update the Adobe Flash Player or something like that. And I was going to say about the Android phone, well, I am going to reset. Anyhow, I decided that I'm going to get a smartphone of some kind, and I kind of did a little bit of research, and I was seeing discussions on, well, suppose the, you know, Android phones or whatever was maybe more popular than others, so that's what I decided to get. I went to Walmart, to the Net10 area, and I got a $20 Android phone, and if I want, the reason why I got it was for two reasons. Play music on breaks at work, and then also I wanted to use the Echolink when I'm not around home here, so I did not really want it for phone calls, so I actually muted that, and since I didn't want to receive phone calls, I downloaded an app called Call Blocker, and it works pretty good. It blocks all calls, but it didn't matter because I have that muted anyway. If I didn't want phone calls while I'm on the Echolink on the Android phone. And I also had the Avast Mobile Security installed there, too. I wanted to uninstall YouTube, but it looks like I can't uninstall it. It keeps asking me if I want to update YouTube. I figured I don't really want to use it for browsing the internet. I just want it for playing music at work, and then also use it for Echolink. And I didn't want to use it for phone calls, and I didn't want to use anything else on there. Although I did end up installing Zello. Z-E-L-L-O, where you can talk to people on Zello, and even set up your own room, like if you want family members to talk to you there. So, cutting out again, that's loose connection and a microphone. Oh well, I'll just probably use a different transceiver. I don't like these modular connectors, not on the mic head anyway. So I guess that was about all I wanted to mention there. Back to you, Daryl, VO1-UKZ, KA9WDX.
All right, QSO, yeah, a lot of good information there, Bernie, for sure. But yeah, I use an Android phone for the same reason. I don't use it, I don't have a cell phone service activated on it. I went and I bought one of these sub-$100 ones at Walmart. That's what I'm speaking into right now. I just wanted it for an alternative to using my main tablet for Echolink. It works fantastic for that. And I didn't put any cell phone service on it at all, not data, not voice. And when I'm home, I use it as a residential phone. I have an app installed on there. Well, of course, Google Hangouts, and this is a bit off topic, but it's still informational, and it is Thursday, so all good. But, Google Hangouts, of course, will make you allow you to place outgoing unlimited calls for free all the time, all over North America. And then I use another app on it for incoming calls that gives me a local phone number. And then I as well have an area code 650 phone number on an app as well, which is a California number for my American friends to get a hold of me. So no actual cell phone service, but I do use the device for voice calls, just over voice over IP type apps. So they work great for that as well. And all you need is an internet service. You don't need to actually have the ISP install a phone service in your house. Just use a voice over IP app and never see a bill. But anyway, I digress. Let's see where I'm at in my notes here. We've covered spyware, we've covered viruses, we've covered ways to get rid of both of those things with SpyBot Search and Destroy for the spyware, of course, and then AVG Free Edition for the virus removal. So I guess next I wanted to get to just speaking a little bit about internet security in general and how to look out for websites that mask themselves as things that they really shouldn't be masking themselves as. For instance, your bank or your, a credit card company or, even your email provider. and you may get emails in your box saying your information is required to update your email account. A change of password request was sent. If you didn't make this, click this link here, and it will take you to a website that looks like Gmail or Hotmail or whatever, and it'll ask you to log in. Well, I highly recommend people look at the address bar. When you link to a website from an email, and make sure that it's the website that you think you're going to, because oftentimes if you look at that URL, it says something completely different up in that address bar than what you intended to go to. And this is another little trick that individuals that, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, hackers, blacklist hackers, okay, because I'm a bit of a hacker, but a whitelist hacker, you can look up the differences on. And it looks like I timed out again, maybe I caught it in time, who knows. But yeah, definitely watch out for the things that appear in address bars, especially if you're linking from an email to a website, because you wouldn't want, you know, to be viewing a website that looks just identical to Bank of America and enter your login credentials and here it's some pirated website coming out of China somewhere that now has your bank account information and you can say goodbye to the life savings pretty much after an incident like that. So we really want to be mindful of what we're clicking on, what websites we're actually going to. Just because the website looks like the one for your bank or looks like the one for your internet service provider, that doesn't mean necessarily that that's the website you're on. So definitely, when linking from emails, look at URLs. All right, next I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about Windows Defender. It did come up earlier in the program. I did intend on speaking briefly about it. And basically what it does, it's a basic protection. It's a basic level of protection, and that's what it boils down to at the end of the day. It's not going to be a solution for your anti-spyware. It's not going to be a be-all, end-all solution for viruses. However, it will keep an eye on some of your emails for issues. It will keep an eye on software that Microsoft has deemed software that shouldn't be used. And I guess that's, you know, could fall under the blanket of anything that's not made by them. But, you know, it is Microsoft after all, and it is Windows. And most of the information, you know, as everyone knows probably, I'm mainly a Windows user. That's what I'm certified in. So that's what I'm, you know, more educated on the topic, I guess, to talk about, you know, as opposed to other operating systems. And if you really want to, you know, stay away from all of this stuff or most of this stuff in general, you know, and I really, really never thought I'd have these words come out of my mouth, but use a Mac. Like, really, most of the stuff that's out there is intended to attack the majority of internet users. The majority of internet users are buying PCs because Macs are just so much more expensive for, you know, in a lot of cases, less capability. What they are good for is what they're made to do, graphics design, photo editing, word processing, you know, business type aspects. Macs are fantastic for that, apparently. I wouldn't know firsthand, but we do have someone on board this evening that does. And at this point, I'd like to pass it over to Gary so I can get to my door there and maybe have a little bit of nicotine while he's informing you people on how to keep yourself safe and protected on a Mac. If you've got any information in regard to that, Gary, now would be the time. KC2RMO, this is VO1UKZ.
And this is, pardon me, this is KC2RMO, and Daryl, I'm going to say smoke him if you got him. We'll take a few minutes here and we'll talk about Macs, okay? And I think it was very big of you to make that concession. I'll tell you something, and I'll be very honest with my operating habits. I'm all over the place. I run Macs. I run Windows machines. I throw Linux on my laptop every now and then. Yeah, it's like it's an OS, and everyone is unique, and everyone has their pluses and their minuses. Some OSs do things better than others. Some it's just really getting down to a matter of preference. You know, I like the way this feels. You know. And there's an intangible there because I use Windows a lot and I use my Macs a lot and I've always felt that when I'm on a Mac I'm more relaxed. I'm in a more relaxed environment than I am when I'm running a Windows machine. So you know what Daryl was saying was you know that you know they they tend to, you know, people tend to use them more for photo editing, et cetera. I don't think there's any difference in functionality between the two. A Mac can do anything that a Windows machine can do. I can even do a little bit more because I can run Windows on a Mac if I want to, or I can run Windows applications on a Mac under a layer called Wine. But that's neither here nor there. We're talking about security right now. Let me buy a nickel. So why are Macs more secure than a Windows machine? Well, first of all, let me tell you that Macs are not immune from viruses, and Macs are not immune from spyware. But as Daryl so aptly put, most of the stuff that's designed to do harm out there is written to invade Windows machines, okay? So you're already ahead of the game when you're running a Mac, because it's just not going to play nicely with your Mac, you know. So it's like, I don't know what to do with this. I just won't infect you, you know. So that's one thing, okay? The other thing is that you are subject to a different class of viruses and malware, okay? The core system, the core underpinnings of OS X is Unix or Linux. Linux is a variant of Unix, which is an old, very well established, very robust, and very solid mainframe type of a software. Okay, and you would think, okay, well, there's not a lot of viruses written for that, but really, there's plenty. They're out there. If they want to get you, they'll get you. So if you just are running a Mac and say, well, it'll never get to me, brother, you're living in a fool's paradise, okay? And that's why I finally, this was a couple of years ago, after getting tired of living in a fool's paradise, I said, I have to do something about this. So I never felt 100% secure. So Avast does make a free product for the Mac, and I put that on my machines, and fortunately I've been lucky and nothing's shown up, but you do really need that. You just really can't go saying it can't get me, because it can. And Daryl was right too. Macs are very expensive machines. The one I'm talking to you on one now, right now. I'm talking to you on a 10-year-old Mac that is running OS 10.6. It's so old I can't go any higher than that. But it works great, and it's been virus resistant, and I have never had security issues with this machine or any of the other Macs. But you gotta be smart. You have to realize that you are working on a computer. Your computer is connected to an internet. Internet is full of evil things, and you have to protect yourself from them. So Mac, Windows, Linux, whatever you're running, you are vulnerable. You can have an attack on your machine. You can have somebody exploiting your data. Okay, hey, while Daryl's having a smoke, let's take a few more check-ins, shall we? I'm KC2RMO. This is the TI. I just timed out, didn't I? So let's take some check-ins. This is KC2RMO on the TIN.
Hey, KC2RMO, WDX.
WDX, come on aboard.
Gary, okay, 1, 2, okay, there you go. It's still showing that you were still transmitting, even though you weren't. Now it's finally showing me transmitting. If you did time out, well, you handed it over for asking for more check-ins, so if you did time out, I don't know, it didn't time out here anyway, or if it did, it was right when you unkeyed or something. So anyway, I wanted to mention two things. I don't know if you call it a worm or not, it might have been some sort of virus. Well, I think it was called a worm or something, you know, a virus that's set up to go off after a certain day or something like that. Anyway, where it sits for a while before it does its thing. One time I found something on my system, and I went and I did a search for it online, and there was a special tool for removing it, and of course I rebooted, and I even tried to scan at the beginning, a boot scan. So, you know, you scan for viruses even before the computer finishes its boot up process, and it kept coming back. I said, what's going on here? I ended up running a program, I think it was called Rootkit or something like that, and what happened is, I don't know what you'd call it, it was a cookie or what, it installed something in the root area there, and so it just kept coming back again, and removing it didn't seem to do any good, so I had to run that, Rootkit, I guess it was called. Let's see what else. Anyway, I'm using my HT now. I'm cross-banding over to 2 meters. I'm using my dual bander instead of using the microphone on the two-meter side since my audio is cutting up on that one. So now I'm cross-banding from 440 over to 2 meters. And something else you were talking about, and I can't think of what the comment was I was going to make there. But by the time you were finished talking, and I lost track of what it was. But it was mainly that one part about running a root kit there to get rid of that worm for good or whatever. So, oh yeah, as I was also going to mention this too at one point in time, restore points, I don't like them. I think if I was going to continue running Windows, I was going to shut them off because they never worked for me. I even went back, several restore points and still wouldn't solve a problem or wouldn't work. Oh, what's going on there now? Windows 8.1 on my netbook here that I run Echolink on, dedicated to that. One time, it went through a restore process because that was some sort of problem I couldn't solve any other way. So I tried restore, went through, finished it, and then I said it was rebooting the computer, locked up. It wouldn't reboot. I kept asking for like an operating system or something. So I actually ended up installing Linux on it, and I've been using that ever since. Oh yeah, I guess it was just Linux, so I'll have to try that out and see if I can get Avast or something on it, because I'm using a Linux Mint. So back to you, Gary, at KC2RMO, K9WD.
Hey, thank you, Bernie. Yeah, I think the timer came up just as I was throwing it over, so I didn't really time out, but I scared myself. Couple of things. You had mentioned a rootkit, and a rootkit is malicious software. That is a bad thing. That is basically something that allows this software to bypass any security and get right into the heart of your computer. Were you aware of that, sir?
I'm back, V1UKZ. I'll touch on rootkit, too.
Bernie, were you aware that a rootkit's a bad thing?
I was trying to key up there and I couldn't do it. So, because over here there was no break. So, yeah, that thought crossed my mind too, but that was the only way I could remove that that worm or whatever you call it. It just kept replicating itself. Even though I removed it, I did the scan and removed it and rebooted my computer, it came back. And I even tried a boot scan. Came back. So after I removed it, I even used a removal tool from I think it was from Microsoft or something. But no matter which way I did it, I could not get rid of it. It just kept coming back. And then I used this tool for removing it from the root drive or whatever root directory, and that finally cured the problem for me. I don't know. Never had a problem after that. But now I don't. I know that some of that stuff can have its own problems there. I turned back the gain a little bit. It's showing a little bit hot on the audio on the screen there. So anyway, if you notice my audio dropped a little bit, that's what I was doing. My node receiver, I was dropping the audio level a little bit. So I didn't really know that. So, but that's the only way I could get rid of it. Yeah, now that thought crossed my mind again, and it just passed by. Back over to you, Gary, at KC2RMO, K9WDX.
Okay, thank you, Bernie. Yeah, I tell you what, we're going to tell you a little bit about rootkits, and I'm going to defer to the security expert here. Daryl, tell us all about these things. They're ugly.
Yeah, rootkit is definitely a scam. It's a scam. The reason you probably have had no issues since, Bernie, is because that thing is probably your issue. If that is still on your system, do a format and reinstall. Do yourself a favor. Completely wipe your computer out. Give it a virtual enema, because that thing, it portrays itself as a set of removal tools for various issues. But what it does, it gets in as an issue itself that's virtually undetectable. It gets into the core of your system, into the root of your system. It basically sets up a mask for itself that other detection softwares can't pick up. So it does some evil things on a whole nother level. So yeah, stay away from that. I don't know if you've got any more direct information about it, Gary, then just stay away from it, because I know I did run into an issue with that, and that was the recommendation for removing something, but the thing that it was supposed to be removing was just, when I installed rootkit, was an addition to the original problem, I guess would be a way to put it. Have you got any more valid information on that, Gary? Go ahead.
This KC2RMO, pardon me. The only thing that I can really add to that is that that is an extremely insidious piece of malware. That it's exactly like you said. It's telling you it's doing you a favor while it's going in and doing you harm. And your recommendation, in my opinion, is exactly correct. And I've heard more than one person recommend that when you get into that situation with a rootkit. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go away. I don't care what it's telling you, and I don't care what antivirus software or scans that you do on it. It's not going to go away. You have to back up your data. Don't back up the system, because you're only going to be backing up the rootkit. But your data, save your pictures, save your documents, save anything that's important that way. And then just blow that drive away. Just format that drive and do a clean install of your system. Because right now, even though you think you're running fat and happy, it ain't the case. You're infected. And I guess, and Daryl, maybe you could offer some comment on this too. Or maybe we could throw it out to the folks that are listening too. I mean, other than the obvious benefit, quotes, of getting information off your machine, why are we dealing with stuff like this, you know? Because it's not all about grabbing information. It's just, a lot of it, to me, seems senseless. I mean, we have, I'd say, at least in my opinion, a good 50% of it serves no purpose other than to mess up your machine, you know? If I knew that I was being targeted to get all the information out of my email or something like that, I understand one thing, but a lot of this stuff just doesn't seem to have a point to it. So anyway, I just figured I'd throw that out. But yeah, Daryl, I definitely agree with your diagnosis, and without a doubt, Bernie, you got to get busy and clean up that machine. Back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Okay there. Thanks, guys. But it's not on there anymore. It was maybe 10 years ago, maybe more, when I ran into that problem, where that was the only way I could get rid of that problem. But like you say, maybe the rootkit causes its own problems there. Now, the PC that I have, it doesn't have it, neither does this netbook. They're both wiped clean, and I did a clean install, fresh install, where I used the whole entire drive, and as a matter of fact, I formatted it and so on. But both my PC and my netbook has Linux Mint on it now, so they're both running Linux. They're not running Windows anymore. So anyway, I removed all the Windows stuff on there. I wiped it clean there. So hopefully I'm clear of that problem. So back to that Kilo Alpha 9 Whiskey Delta X-ray.
All right, yep, and in addition, like you say, if anybody ever does get affected by that rootkit software or others that are extremely detrimental to your system, really the only way back, and as a matter of fact, I had a station over on another net earlier this week that had been so infected by spyware and had no scanners on the system, no nothing, and then was just totally inundated by pop-ups and freezes and couldn't do anything, couldn't open the Echolink software without things were popping up and masking his screen. And I was figuring maybe I could do a remote login and get into his system and then install SpyBot and do the update, immunize and all of that. But no, sir, didn't even do the trick. When I tried to do a remote connection, I'd be in there for maybe 30 seconds, and whatever it was would completely terminate external incoming connections, and man, oh, man. So at the end of the day, he needed to format his computer and completely remove all of that stuff off there. And sometimes just formatting the machine won't even do the trick with some of the real nasty stuff. You have to repartition your drive, which is the underlying structure of it that allows for a format. Before the format can happen, the drive needs a partition. And that's what, you know, the format goes over top of the partition. So sometimes removing the entire partition is the only way to get out of some of this stuff. But let's see where we are right now. We've covered the majority of the things that I wanted to cover here this evening. Just one or two other things that I wanted to touch on before we finish up here this evening. And that is security with your mobile devices at places like airports, border security, and customs. It was recently brought to my attention that by law in most countries, when entering a country, that you're required to enter in your PIN number for your smartphone to unlock it so they can get access to it. And apparently it's nice and legal for customs to request you unlock your smartphone. Well, it's been brought to my attention that there's ways around this. And if particularly you're in the law profession, for instance, where confidentiality agreements or stuff come into play, you don't want that data to be accessed by someone at border security that, you know, is probably, you know, could potentially pass on information they saw or whatever. There's confidential data out there that you have the right to protect. But apparently just having a PIN number on your device or a password that can be entered apparently is not the way to do it. If you're crossing borders or crossing, you know, in other instances, apparently the law enforcement, for instance, could tell you, unlock your smartphone. We want to see what's going on. We want to see if you're doing anything illegal. In some situations, they're perfectly within their rights to do so. So what I highly recommend for data security is encrypt your devices. They don't have the right to ask you to decrypt an encrypted device. So if you're carrying that smartphone, if you're carrying that BlackBerry, that iPhone, and you're using it for work purposes, encrypt your device, and then you cannot be asked to decrypt your device at border crossings and airports or land borders. So if you want to protect that data, encrypt your device. A PIN number, password is just not going to do it. Those settings are in every operating system, every mobile operating system. iOS has a way to do it. Android has a way to do it. So encrypt your devices to protect yourself in, you know, extreme situations. So that is a must. I have my tablet encrypted. My Windows device is encrypted with a biometric scanner. I do work for an American company that handles American government databases. So in my situation, confidentiality agreements and data security is paramount. So, bottom line, encrypt your devices if you don't want them to be accessed. And when you encrypt a device, there is no way someone can get into it and view your data. There is just no way. You can set it up so that 10 incorrect attempts, or even 1 or 2 or 3, I don't recommend setting your number that low, because, you know, you can input your password wrong and it may flatten all your data out of your device. But it's good to have a reset mechanism put into an encrypted device so that if it is stolen, if it is, you know, confiscated at a border or something, no one can view your data if it's encrypted. So you can take that one to the bank. And I am a security and network engineer and security specialist in this stuff, so take my advice. If you're a big-time international traveler, encrypt your device. That's all I'm going to say on that particular one. Now, the last and final point I want to touch on this evening is the be-all, end-all way to make yourself virtually invisible on the Internet. It has good applications, but along with everything that has good applications, this can have bad applications as well. And what I'm going to touch on briefly right now is Tor, T-O-R, Tango Oscar Romeo. What Tor is a protocol. It's an Internet protocol for security that I believe was originally developed by DARPA and CIA with the intention of them being able to have complete and total anonymity online. But, of course, if the government is going to be able to be invisible, the people should have the same right to invisibility, to security, to protection while you're online. If you don't want those emails you're sending to be able to be viewed, and trust me, there's no one sitting down at their computer reading every single email you type or listening to every single phone call you make. But I will guarantee you right now, all of that data is being captured and stored. All of it. Everything. Your Gmail, your Hotmail, your website traffic, where you go, what you download. Trust me. If 5 years down the road the CIA or the FBI decides they're going to take a look at you because someone said something, whether it's true, whether it's not true, they will be able to go back 5 years, 10 years, and see what you were doing 5 years ago, if you were up to anything back then. So if you want to have total security on the internet, Tor is a protocol that you can install on any Windows machine, Linux machine, smartphones, tablets, whatever. And essentially what it does, when you make a request, when you're running the Tor protocol, every request you send from your machine gets bounced around about 1,000 servers in different countries all over the internet and makes it impossible, and I mean absolutely impossible, for any government agencies, any hackers, anybody to notice and find what you're doing online. It is the most secure way to go about anything on the internet, and again, it's called T-O-R, Tor. And you install a client on your PC, your smartphone, your tablet, whichever, and you are anonymous from that point. They will not be able to find you, track you, watch you. Now, mind you, I wouldn't go logging into, you know, any corporate email accounts or anything like that using Tor, because those providers will be able to tell that you're using it, and it's frowned upon in a lot of business environments and things like that, just for the reason that people look at it, well, if you want to be so invisible online, what is it that you're up to that you don't want us to know about? And then they'll implement other security tracking mechanisms on their local side. If you're going through your company's network, they have the right to monitor and analyze your traffic, and they'll know you're using Tor. So I'm talking, you know, in your home, for instance, or on your mobile device, not something owned by a company. Because if it's owned by a company, they can in turn track what you're doing locally. So it's not really going to do a whole lot, only get your employer suspicious as to why you're using a protocol like Tor. But for your personal devices, the protection of your own private emails or private web traffic or things that should be private, because, I mean, if you go to a library, for instance, and you were to pick up, this is years ago I'm talking now, and pick up a book, the only one that knows you got that book is the library and you. Okay, it was pretty confidential. You could do your research, you could do look into things, whatever, without the whole world knowing. In my opinion, it should be the same way online. You should have the right to look into things, research things, without the whole GD world knowing what you're doing. And Tor is the way to go about doing that. So I'm not going to get into, you know, what its negative uses are, with the exception of one. I'll talk briefly and very briefly about the Silk Road. You can look it up, and this is the type of crap that gives Tor a bad name, a bad reputation. If you check into the Silk Road, it was a massive website enterprise set up that was used to traffic in illegal substances and illegal services, hitmen, drug dealing, all kinds of stuff. And they were using Tor and an internet currency called Bitcoin to carry out their illegal activities for years. The CIA actually had to infiltrate the organization to bring it down because they couldn't locate where the servers were coming from, because Tor was doing such a fantastic job at masking it. And this is, I mean, the CIA can't crack this stuff. So, you know, the closer they get, the better people get at developing encryption to keep them out. So it's the only real safe way to navigate the internet. But anyhow, that was the last topic that I wanted to cover this evening, was Tor. You can research it yourself and look into it and how to set it up and configure it. I'm not going to answer questions on that, but I did feel that it was my duty in a program about internet security and how to keep yourself online to keep yourself safe online, to at least mention it. And it's definitely worth the time to look into it, because it is the only way, the only definitive way to keep yourself safe online is to use a protocol like Tor. All right, that's going to be it for me for this evening. So at this point, I'll take another pause. We'll take any more questions that are out there lingering around from any of the topics covered this evening. And if anybody would like any further elaboration on anything, I will elaborate on Tor slightly, but I'm not going to get into how to configure it and what you can use it for and what you can do with it. But let me just tell you, there is a completely independent chunk of the Internet out there that you can't see with your Google Chromes and your Internet Explorers and your Firefoxes. There is a completely different chunk of the Internet out there called the Deep Web. You can look into it. You need Tor to be even able to see it. But once you see what else is available out there on the Internet and what's going on, maybe you'll want to stay as far away from it as you can get. But, again, it is the only definitive way to be. And I think I just timed out, despite the fact that I was dropping it every so often. But I don't know. I digress. Anyway, that's everything for me this evening. Unless anybody has any further questions about any of the topics covered, I'll take a pause right now for that end.
RMO, quick comment.
KSFQ would like to check in and a quick question on that tour.
All right, we've got KC2RMO and KC8FQV. And good evening to you as well, Mark. And go ahead, Gary.
Hey, thank you, Daryl. A couple of big ones for the last. I would just like to make a comment here. We had a couple of really heavy-duty topics here at the end, encryption and anonymity on the Internet. This could be the subject, I think, of a of another TIN. I'd like to suggest that, as a matter of fact, that maybe we could do a focus on that in a future TIN, because these are big issues, there's a lot of ethical considerations involving both of them. So it might make for a really good net. I'll turn it back. It's easy for me to say. I'll turn it back to you, sir. This is KC2RMO.
Yeah, there was a real good reason, Gary, why I snuck them in toward the end, because they are two real big ones and two recommendations that I make to a lot of people, especially in corporate environments and, you know, in regard to encryption when it comes to corporate environments and, you know, confidentiality agreements, because a lot of companies and businesses this day and age, especially firms that are doing research in the legal industry, the medical industry, you know, your data should be your data. And in my opinion, no one should have the right to demand that you allow them to view your data. You know, your information came from your head. It's like saying that, you know, I mean, where does it stop? Where do you have the right to say, listen, this is my data. This is information that came from my head. Intellectual property, I don't think you have the right to access it. But apparently, airports, border crossings, things like that, they have the right to view your data if it's not encrypted. And you can look into this. I'm not saying anything here this evening that can't be, you can't go and check out for yourself. But, you know, if you have that smartphone in your pocket or that tablet, they can request your passwords. They really can. And if you check out some of these television programs like Border Security, for instance, and you look at the things that they're allowed to see, I mean, it's just incredible. If you're trying to go into a country for business, the border security agents at that country can request, you know, everything right down from unlocking your smartphone to cavity searches. So you got to be real, real careful when it comes to your data and crossing borders. And encryption is the only way as it stands right now. There's some things going through Congress. There's some things in the international community going through individual governments that prevent, you know, and you know, protect your data a little bit, but if your device is not encrypted, it's fair game, and I don't think it should be, so encrypt your devices. If you don't want them accessed, encrypt them. Simple as that. And go ahead, Mark, KC8FQV, good evening to you.
All right, good evening. Yeah, you were saying, just talking about that BitTorrent and going in darker into, you know, I'm just wondering now, is that, you know, I mean, is there any companies legitimately using that for, well, not purpose to hide stuff, but, you know, just for security reasons or whatever? You know, that's the only question I had, you know, because you said you can go into the darker side of the Internet, which, you know, it seems like everything has gone to the Internet now. You know, it seems like they plug a cat cable into the wall and your phones and everything else is just going through. I mean, like your banks, you go to the banks. As a matter of fact, I found out that the checks, when I take and deposit the check, they don't send them downtown. Once they process them at the branch, that's it. They're done. So they must, I assume they must shred them there after they know they have gone through. And I know they say I can deposit a check with my phone and, you know, just hold on to it for a period of time and then get rid of it, you know, destroy it. So I'm just wondering, is there legitimate companies using the darker side of the Internet? KCFQV.
Well, when you say the darker side of the Internet, that's kind of like the negative stereotype that Tor gets. In regard to, like, legitimate companies use Tor, yes, for anonymity purposes. They do. If, for instance, you know, setting up a VPN used to be the way to do it, but you set up a VPN now, I mean, the first end of the VPN, VPN is a virtual private network. Okay, it's virtual. It's not physical. It's not physically private. It's a tunnel, basically, that runs through the Internet from your point to the, you know, being the sender, let's say, to the receiving point. It runs through. But essentially, that data is still going over the open Internet. It's going from one IP address to another IP address. So if someone wanted to get into it, they could technically get into it. What happens with Tor, when you make a request for a website, let's say, without it, your IP address comes up on the website saying, listen, this is the person that wants to communicate with our website. It's a direct connection. When you use Tor, your IP address, one, it's masked. Your request, before it gets to the server that you want to request information from, it bounces maybe through 1,000 different servers. So there's no way to tell what country the request originated from, where or by who or whatever. It's, you're anonymous. If you use Tor, you're anonymous, and that's just it. You can't be seen. You can't be tracked. You can't be followed. You can't be monitored, any of it. You're basically, but when your signal leaves your house, your IP address, it bounces maybe to 15 different countries before it gets where it's originating, so there's no way for anyone to know where it came from or where it originated or any of that stuff. So there are companies that use it for privacy, you know, issues, yes, to communicate with each other. The journalists use it a lot to communicate with their bureaus back in the States, overseas reporters. They use it so that the governments in the originating country where they're accessing the Internet can't get the data that's being sent because it literally bounces and fragments everywhere before it reassembles on the other end. Like I said, there's a lot of real good practical reasons to use it, but unfortunately, there are a lot of businesses out there. You won't even see them with your regular browser, your Chromes, your Internet Explorers, your Firefoxes, your Siris. None of this will even see it, as if it doesn't even exist. But if you use Tor and install a Tor browser, all of a sudden there's going to be a lot of stuff that you can now see in regard to websites and things like that that are not visible on the regular Internet that you require Tor to even see them. And there is a lot of negative aspects going on the deep web, yes. But there are a lot of really logical reasons to use it as well. If you require an anonymity online, like I said, it's the only way to do it. So you can look into Tor, what it is, how it functions, how it does what it does, and decide for yourself whether or not it's something you want to use. I don't recommend it for the negative uses, definitely not. I don't recommend illegal activity online. But if you want privacy, yes, it'll work for privacy. And I mean right down to the highest levels of government will not be able to see what you're doing if you use Tor. So it's just basically for a privacy thing. That's what it was, original creation. It was a privacy protocol, and that's what it was. Highly encrypted, highly untraceable. But yeah, of course, you introduce something like that into an environment like the Internet, of course, bad people are going to find ways to use it. But Tor itself is not a bad thing. It shouldn't be labeled as a bad thing, but unfortunately it is. So, but yes, it's not illegal to use it. You're doing nothing wrong by using Tor, by accessing it. It was originally developed, like you say, for governments to hide their activity. So if governments can use it, why can't everyone else? So anyway, that's enough about Tor. But yeah, Gary, you're right. We could really go on for another 2 hours about encryption for an hour and probably about Tor's positive and negative uses for an hour. So perhaps an upcoming TIN, who knows? Any further questions for this evening before we close things down? This is VO1 UKZ with the monthly TIN on South Paris. All right, no further comments. So let's pass it over to you, Gary, for any final comments that you may have, and then you can pass it back to me. I'll put the ribbons on it.
All right, thank you, Daryl. Great net tonight. This is always a great topic, and it's a useful topic. As we use our devices and we rely on our devices more and more and more, you really need to get more and more and more wise to the ways of security. I do like the idea of expanding this conversation on encryption and anonymity. I think this would make a fascinating net sometime in the future. I think these are two big issues. I mean, I think we look at, and we don't have time, obviously, to get into it now, but you look at the issue between the terrorists and Apple and that whole debate, that's one thing. As far as, you know, encryption, and, you know, we look at various and sundry needs for anonymity, and that gets to be a big debate too. So it's a fascinating topic, and it's something that really needs to be discussed too. It's interesting because that's just one of the projects I'm working on. One of the things I'm just wrapping up in school here is some comments on intellectual property. So. Kind of timely too, but great net, and I think we can carry this on a lot further. So thank you so very much for doing this presentation. It's been outstanding, and I hope everybody, I'm sure everybody that was listening feels exactly the same way. Back to you, Daryl. This is KC2RMO.
Oh, the security things in Apple. Oh man, oh man, oh man. I wasn't even going to talk about this, but I will. Just a tad to close things up here. Apparently, Apple, as a hardware manufacturer, okay, and they make all of these devices, your iPhones, iPods, iPads, and iMacs, and iBooks, and everything that has an I in front of it, pretty much with the Apple trademark. At the end of the day, it's come up recently in the last couple of weeks. This big old issue has gotten opened up, okay? Apparently, if you encrypt your Apple devices, apparently at the end of the day, Apple still holds the keys. There's a trusted platform module. It's not a TPM exactly, but in all Apple devices, all newer Apple devices, that allows Apple to have the keys basically to decrypt any encrypted device. And on the Android side, this has not yet become a problem because it's up to the manufacturers of each device to put a chip in their device that allows this kind of stuff. Your Samsungs, your Huawei's, your HP's, your LG's, you know, all of these other companies now that develop for Android are not doing this. They don't have these chips. But Apple, apparently, it's come out recently that they have chips in all their devices that will allow them to decrypt or unlock any device that was ever linked to iCloud, okay? I don't have all the information on it yet, but it's scary. At the end of the day, it's scary that one manufacturer has so many devices out there on the market that at the end of the day, they hold the keys to the back door. And I don't like it, but just one more strike against Apple, in my opinion, is what that whole thing boils down to be. It may come in handy, yes, for the security aspect of terrorism and all of this, but when it comes to terrorism, how much of it is really a smokescreen developed by governments? I mean, I'm not really going to get into all of this tonight, but, you know, how many of... No, I won't even get into it. Not even going to open the can of worms at all. Anyway, Apple holds the keys at the end of the day, so use Android. Yeah. Anyway, any further comments for the show before we close things down? This is VO1 UKZ. All right, this has been South Coast Amateur Radio Service. Informations and net schedules can be found on our website at voip.southcars.com. This net has definitely been recorded as a podcast, so of course anybody that participated will be in that recording. And if anyone is interested in rehearing this or any of our past nets here on South Cars, please feel free to go to our website at voip.southcars.com. Scroll down toward the bottom to the past nets and podcast section. This one will appear sometime tomorrow, I would guess. At the bottom of that list, there are other programs similar to this topic that we've covered in the past, as well lots of other great nets, so go ahead and check those out at voip.southcars.com. Other than that, I didn't have an official post amble in front of me to close things down, so we will call it a net. This is VO1 UKZ for South Coast.